I'm sitting on the veranda of a farmhouse about 3 hours south of Sydney. But this isn't just any property. It belongs to the Boyd family and plays home to Bundanon Art Museum, one of the country's 9 national collecting institutions, and the only one out in the bush. I'm here for the opening weekend of Bundanon's latest exhibition, Sky, Earth, Water. Inside the gallery, an impressive array of found materials have gained new life as poetic assemblages. Corrugated iron, warped and discoloured, ripples at knee height, evoking a sense of water. Weathered grey and golden pieces of wood, painstakingly compiled one piece at a time, call to mind the expanse of wheat fields. A fish trap woven to monumental scale cascades from the ceiling, a kaleidoscope of colour. Playful stoneware adorned with birds sits with clumps of clay reminiscent of, believe it or not, wombat poo. And baskets, epic in their size, made from the rusted wire of bed frames and property gates. This exhibition, Sky, Earth, Water, is drawing together 4 distinct female artists: Lorraine Connolly Northey, Glenda Nichols, Janet Fieldhouse, and the late Rosalie Gascoigne. Each engaging in the natural world, material of place and country. Bundanon CEO, Rachel Kent, says that in bringing the work of Lorraine, Glenda and Janet into conversation with Rosalie, it allows different perspectives of place and the landscape to be experienced.
Because of course Bundanon is Wadi Wadi country, it's on the country of the Dharawal and Durga language groups of the south coast of New South Wales. That's absolutely foundational for this organisation, and to bring First Nations voices centrally to the conversation, to foreground and showcase First Nations creative voices is really at the essence of what we do.
Arguably, the artist with the strongest aesthetic link to Rosalie Gascoigne's work is Lorraine Connolly Northey. When Lorraine first started her artistic practice, people would often bring up Rosalie's work. Lorraine says being part of an exhibition like this has been extraordinary.
Because Rosalie's a bit like, you know, the mother of, you know, in the art world, and in the material that I used, you know, I could say she's very much a mother figure in that kind of material usage. But how exciting is it that the gallery also doesn't leave Rosalie on her own and brings in First Nations people to surround her? I think that's really beautiful on country that they do that. And to be part of that, to be a First Nations person in company of Rosalie's work, and it's even more important because Rosalie's not with us anymore. And so as Aboriginal people, when we talk about and think about feels the spirits of people, it's really lovely, you know, having Rosalie in spirit. So it's another extraordinary level that we as First Nations people sit with Rosalie in that kind of presence where we know her presence is there.
This isn't to say that Lorraine draws her influence from Rosalie. In fact, for many years, she was so worried about their perceived similarities. Lorraine worked hard to avoid Rosalie's work. When she eventually allowed herself to study it in a book, she was overcome with relief.
I remember thinking, oh God, you know, what was I worried about? Two people can use the same material and make different things. So it's a huge relief, to say the least.
Lorraine says her work is about the injustices done to Aboriginal people. For Sky, Earth, Water, she's created a number of baskets, boundless in size, that hang on the white walls of the gallery. Clustered together on a nearby plinth are oversized kulaman and digging sticks. All these objects have been crafted from salvaged scrap wire and aluminium, speaking to layers of context of history, materiality, and of course, country.
So many of those pieces that are bendable, you know, I would naturally go about folding them in half to make the base of a bag so you could place things in and they'd be that 3D bag. But with the height of the wall, it's like, no, I can go for it. And I let those pieces be as they are and not have to go about folding, and which is a hard job in itself. So it's nice just to have that. And so they are still 3D. They certainly have plenty of room in that space, and they're doing me proud, I have to say.
I would love for you to tell me a little bit more about the practicalities of working on such a large scale.
Yes, it is exhausting work. It, you know, your mind is just going 10 to the dozen. And when my sons were younger, of course, they know I'm not very good with heights, and so I'll go up like two runners on the ladder and then make them go higher. And I really feel for them, because I know that they don't know what I'm on about or what I'm looking at or looking for, and yet I expect them to give me answers from the height of a ladder. I'm sure they're very relieved that they're growing out of that and not tolerating me as much and not having to do that. So I don't have these kind of assistants to get up on the ladder to get that view. So it is a crazy way to go about laying it out on the lawn. You know, people will tell you from the past that I've shared how I've mowed a patch of lawn so that I can lay this out as if that mowed patch is the gallery wall. And I just have to go about the best I can and place them out. And, of course, right now I've got a lot of bark everywhere, so you can't even picture it, but they certainly, when they come to places like Bundanon, you just can't believe how good my work makes white wall look, and a little bit of lighting as a bonus.
It's kind of fascinating to me that you do so much of the work in your backyard. A lot of people, when they think about a working artist, they think of the studio and the way that kind of environment would impact what you're able to make. I guess, given your philosophy on caring for country, there's something really beautiful about you being able to work outside.
I believe it keeps me grounded, if I can say it like that. You know, when we talk about country, we do want to have our feet on the ground. We do want to stay close to that. So when I am out there doing that thing, that skill that I learnt from my dad, and my non-Aboriginal dad at that, learning how to see something as something else, it's pretty exciting. For example, a very simple example would be looking at a drain pipe and thinking about a didgeridoo, because I am making objects representative, contemporary at that, but representative of traditional Aboriginal Australian society. So, you know, I'm making those objects like, you know, bags and bowls and things, but also men's work as well, which is another whole story. But it's really exciting to be able to go out with that kind of skill that's handed on, and then with knowledge of culture that I've been very fortunate to have taught myself over many, like 40 years now. But that makes it very understandable and easy to look at something in an old dump of an old scatter of, say, 120 years old and say, wow, I can take that piece and I can do this to that, and that will perhaps put a piece of wire on for a handle and there's the bag. I don't have to do much to it at all. And that's what culture is about, not having to exert too much energy, not because we're lazy, but it's because there's many things to be done, work's never done, and you never know when somebody dies or a disease or war, and we have to get up, we have to move where we live. And so it's about preserving energy. And so it's pretty exciting to drag something out of a pile or get one of my poor sons to get in there and get it out, you know, because if we haven't got flies, we've got mosquitoes, we've got dust, we've got snakes, we've got all sorts going on. So you get in there and get that out and you can pull that out. I can see what that's going to be already. That's why I'm taking it. If I can't see that, I'll leave that for another day. Maybe I come back to the next pile another month, and the piece that I left next to it, I see something in that this time and I'll take it. Or it's what the exhibition is about. So you're trying to tie that into the, you know, for 25 years, I think it's about five exhibitions, I've actually had the freedom of not having to be controlled by a title. But of course, you end up making the same kind of objects because you are on about the injustices of your people in Australia. So you don't want to get out of those shapes of those objects either.
Lorraine, I want to backtrack a little. What got you interested in being an artist?
Well, like many artists, just simply an accident. So, you know, we are going out, living off the land, what I used to think was camping. But as you get older, you realise, you know, your family doesn't have much money. Your family doesn't have much money. And Mum was raised, you know, in constructions or buildings that are made of the material that I use. So, you know, getting a little sidetracked there, people say, "What is she, your mum must be proud of you. What does she think of your work?" And I say, "Mum doesn't say anything about it, because that's material that she had to live in, which is from the local tips of the day, you know, because Aboriginal people surviving, fringe dwellers pushed out of the towns, living near the sewerages, scavenging from the dumps, from the local tips, and making their shelters out of them. So, of course, Mum said she wasn't going to come out bush with Dad and the kids unless Dad organised a shower for her, and of this he never did. But as children, like in the bush with Dad all weekend, and we would even do, not just all weekends, even when Dad needed something, we would go and do a trip. And you would think it was a big trip as little kids, but of course, it's only when you grow up, it's only 30 k's out of town, and Dad would go out and be scavenging, finding bits that he needed. Like the Aboriginal people, he only took what he needed. And so he'd bring something home and he'd fix something with it, because that was the affordability at the time. So of course, you know, there are those times when you are learning that skill. So I have that, and of course, acquiring cultural knowledge. Years later, I return home, and I, you know, I ask Mum, "Can I borrow Dad for like 5 years to go back out and rediscover my childhood environments, which were the Mallee and the Riverina? You know, we had the wet and the dry. It was pretty exciting, and I was looking at fibre that was not reputable. This is how different I'd already become. There was not reputable for weaving, the coil weaving, because I wanted my work to be distinguished. If I become a weaver, I wanted to stand out. I wanted that you looked at my work and knew it was mine in an instant. But what I didn't know at the time was that my Dad would eventually introduce me and encourage me to use a rusty old piece of tin, of which I screwed my nose up. But my Dad is a past farmer, found these materials very pleasing, and he carried on about it to the point that I said, "Oh, put it in the boot, we'll take it home." And weeks later, like, Dad had given me an old rusty, very big old heavy rusty axe head, and I used grey blankets. So that's another whole thing to do with cloak Aboriginal cloak making, collecting blankets and trying to work out to do with blankets replacing cloaks. And these grey blankets are pretty precious to me. I try to get them from the police station, and particularly if one of the brothers or sisters had used them, and they used to always say, "Lorraine, you're too hard basket, get out." They would never give me these grey blankets that I wanted, sorry, that it touched our people's bodies, and I'm still working on that, making artworks about that. So grey blankets are very precious to me, and I had this very small collection, and yet I sacrificed one of them to protect this boring old bit of rusty tin so that I could pound it with his rusty axe head, trying to make a little bit of a shape in that, which was not easy. I was trying to produce this bottom of a football shape in the base of a square bit of tin. So it was a lot of hard work. And then my parents visited, and I said to my mum, "If you could take that outer edge off and just look at that shape there, what do you think that could be on its own?" And she said, "Well, a coolerman, of course." And I said, "Oh, Mum, you're a great student. You got it right, right?" And I said, "I can now be a sculptor."
In another part of the gallery, you'll find the contribution of Janet Fieldhouse. Drawing on her matrilineal connections to the Torres Strait Islands and on the very wildlife she observed at Bundanon. Here's Rachel Kent again.
I mean, they're so sweet. Absolutely obsessed with the birds of Bundanon. There's definitely a book or a story or something in this in the future. But the thing that really makes me smile too is she was also quite taken by the wombats, and specifically the very cubic poos of the wombats. And so she made, just to contextualize her ceramic works, this series of beautiful little cubic shapes, which actually are a little playful reference to the wombats of Bundanon and also these lovely little red felt flowers, which if you look closely at the dung on the property, you see these tiny, tiny flowers. So it's actually about very close observation, because I can guarantee most people would not notice those flowers.
Although Janet couldn't come to Bundanon for the exhibition's opening weekend, she'd spent time at the property as part of an artist residency. It's one of the unique elements of Bundanon as an organisation.
You know, it was the home of Arthur and Yvonne Boyd, you know, in the 70s, 80s, in the 90s. It was gifted by the Boyds to the nation, so to all Australian people, specifically for the purpose of supporting artists and art forms. And they stipulated very clearly in the deed of gift and the constitution that Bundanon should be a working arts centre. So it has this very specific history as an artist's place, an artist's legacy, an artist's gift to the nation, a working arts centre. And it supports artists through creative residencies on site, through educational programs, and through display. And I can't actually think of many other organizations, I mean, either in this part of the world or elsewhere, that support the full arc of the creative process from, you know, the origin of the idea, the beginnings of the work, a residency process where you can really absorb a place, step away and create an experiment, all the way through to the opportunity to present the work, whether it's an exhibition, a performance, a reading, you know, whatever it may be, a concert. In this case, of course, works for an exhibition program.
Janet wasn't the only featured artist to undertake a residency. Wadi Wadi Ngurundjeri and Yorta Yorta artist Glenda Nichols is a weaver based in Swan Hill. She's known for constructing elaborate sculptural works. And for Sky Earth Water, Glenda spent months weaving an intricate and vibrantly coloured fishing net. While others, me included, might be tempted to call Glenda a master weaver, it's not a label she would use for herself.
What I do is generational. It's been handed down. So watching my mother and my grandmother, not really being taught by them, but watching, and then in later life sitting down and having a go. And it's like, you know, we've got a blueprint within us that you've got to do a journey in your life before you, you know, it triggers off something, and then you can sit down and one day, you know, it might just fall into place and you can do this stitch really wonderfully. And other days it's like, oh, this is hard work. I'm not meant to be doing this. Mm. So it just keeps, it sort of just means that you keep trying, you know. Today you can't, tomorrow you can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long have you been weaving?
I guess since my early teens. There was a group in Swan Hill that my mum was a part of, and of course we all got carted along, and that's where we were watching as well as being taught by, you know, I think back then it was the CWA women that came in to our group, and there were a couple of women from Canada. So doing our traditional type weaving, or our parents were, and grandparents were doing that traditional type weaving and that, but adapting to what was around them. And the Canadian women were showing them different types of weaving processes. Mm. So I guess from there, but I didn't really take it up properly until in my 50s. So I'm still on the journey. Not sure for how long. It depends on your fingers and how good your bone structures can handle it.
Can you tell me a little about the work that you have made for Sky Earth Water?
You had to go on a journey with that. I was invited here to Bundanon, and I didn't really want to travel all this way, because coming from northern Victoria across country by myself. So I took my younger sister, Darlene, into coming with me. It was just looking at the landscape, exploring, and then going home and thinking about what, you know, the work I do, because I only do feather flowers, I shouldn't say only, but I make feather flowers. I do fishnet weaving and pine needle weaving, and they're the three main things that I really stick to. I'm not a sketcher or a painter or, you know, those sorts of works. So it was a bit difficult going home and then putting it out to the universe, thinking, now, you know, what out of those three crafts can I come up with for something for Bundanon? And when I was here for the residency, looking at the country, you know, it had to be about country. I saw the looking glass tree, which we call ring trees in the country where we come from. And I saw the colours of the landscape, you know, the rock formations and water, because it was raining at the time, water seeping through the rocks and little creeks running across the road, little channels running across the road and things like that. So with fishnets, you know, they catch things. So I thought, well, okay, the fishnet, because it can catch all those things. So it became the fishnet, but I wanted rocks in it as well. So my vision was landscape with a rock, piece of rock, large piece of rock falling and breaking up into boulders. And then thinking about it, and I thought, how much time did I have? And I thought, I'm not going to have time to do all this, you know, the woven boulders as well as the fishnet weave. So that's when I thought, there was a reason why my sister came with me. So I asked her, and yeah, she eagerly jumped at it, and some beautiful, because her work with woven baskets and that, just brilliant. And I thought, no, I'm going to drag her along with me on this journey. I don't like using the word con, but I conned her into making these beautiful rock pieces. I just make baskets, we turn them upside down, and they're rocks. So I want a big rock. Originally I wanted three, but I thought, no, that's not going to be enough time to do all those. So a big rock with bits that are broken, you know, when it hits the ground, it shatters. So, yeah, so the fishnet became the landscape, like a mountain of different colours. And it was a little bit funny because I was thinking, how the heck am I going to colour this? Because I live in a rental place. Thank goodness it's in the country, and it had a Holz hoist washing line in the backyard. So I walked out and I thought, okay, what am I going to do? And I looked, you know, of course, the line's right there. Washing line was right there. So I thought, I can use that. So up went the net in different parts, you know, around the washing line. It was just all strung up around the line. And the spray bottle came out with the colours. So that was hard work, you know, sort of spraying with this little hand spray bottle, doing the different colours. But it worked out quite well. Mind you, I did have a nice big piece of tarp that I used for camping. Thank goodness, everything, you know, I hadn't used it before. Dragged that out, put under the washing line first so that the colours wouldn't leach into the soil. So that was a feat in itself. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, thinking, oh, heck, I wonder how my sister's going with the... because she does beautiful close woven stitch of the coil weaving. And that's from our mother's country, Ngunnawal country. And, yeah, it took her as long to make the basket as it did with me with the net. So it just goes to show that it's not easy work, but we did it, and we're really pleased with how it turned out.
I'm so pleased that you talked about the colours in your work, because that was one of the things that jumped out to me when I was looking at it earlier. How big is the fishnet that you that you created?
I guess I could start off with about 200 plus stitches beginning, and I'm sitting in my lounge room watching Home and Away. That's when I start watch weaving, and I'll weave until about, you know, midnight, and then it's time to go to bed. So that was my time for weaving the net. I can't say how long it took to make it, because it starts when it starts and it'll finish when it tells you it's finished. And I finished it on the 3rd of January, which was my daughter's birthday. It told me, no, that's it, that's enough. And I put it away until it was time to colour it. And, well, gosh, good question how long it was, because I didn't really know until I started colouring it and I hung it on the washing line. And even then I didn't realise. When I took it in to fold it up, in my tiny little lounge, trying to fold that, you still can't figure out. You can't see it in that length until it's been hung like it has now. It's really hard. And even the colour, putting the colour in, you don't know how the colour's going to turn out until the final, it's dry. And even then, you know, and not until it's hung. So it's like surprise, even to me as the artist. It's a nice surprise to see it come alive.
Later in the afternoon, Glenda and her sister held a weaving workshop. It's a chance for them to demonstrate that what they do is more than a craft. It's generational.
I don't like just showing what I do. I like to do a PowerPoint presentation that that has photos of my, you know, great-great-grandmothers and, you know, a montage of how it's been handed down in the women's side. And it could be men as well, but so far we haven't had men that have taken up the weaving side of things, except a younger brother who's helped my father do a kambungi, which is a waterweed fishnet. So it's generational. It's not just something I've gone to a workshop and learned how to do, and then today I'm teaching it. Mm. So it's been handed down, and I think there's about six generations so far that I can sort of show down to my granddaughter, who hasn't really done the fishnet weaving. She's watched me. She's had a go at weaving with raffia. And, well, today we use raffia because we adapt. We can't get to those water grasses and that like we used to. And if we do, you've got to be the right time to pick them. You've got to get permission from farmers sometimes to get onto the country to get those grasses. You've also got to contend with cattle and sheep, you know, eating those chemicals which make the grasses brittle. You know, and I sometimes wonder how it was years ago. One person couldn't make a fishnet like that.
Yeah.
It would take a whole community to go out to harvest the grasses firstly, and you'd have to have specialists in the field that knew what sort of grasses to harvest. Then you need specialists in the field of making string, because not everyone was a specialist in those fields. So firstly, people to harvest, then people to make the string, and then the specialists to weave the net, and then the specialists to know where the fish are and to drag the net to, you know, get the fish, and then the ones that know how to cook it properly. And, you know, it was a whole community thing that happened. And to me, that's pretty special. I think about that when I'm actually weaving the net and how it captures all that, you know, within the net. And when I'm talking about this now, it sort of jogged my memory that when, I guess, Darlene as well and myself, when we were making these items, there was a lot of things happening every day that was woven into those pieces. But just all those little stories, you know, you see on the news while you're watching telly, your everyday life, people passing, people giving birth, you know, family members, new family members, all those things are woven into the net. Our weaves are never empty. They're full of our thoughts and our feelings. And I think that sort of says it all, you know, when we're weaving. Everything we do every day, everything we think about, all the happenings in our life, that's all woven into the work that we do.
That was Glenda Nichols speaking with me at Bundanon Art Museum on opening weekend of Sky Earth Water. You also heard from Lorraine Connolly Northey and Rachel Kent. Sky Earth Water, which includes the work of Janet Fieldhouse and Rosalie Gascoigne, is on now until June 14. You can find more details about the exhibition on Bundanon's website, bundanon.com.au. I'll put a link on Away's show page too.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.